Rose on Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy, a Huffington Post blogger and longstanding integrative health journalist, and I bring the show to you today. This is our second show, beginning now in this new year. And in this program, every week we'll be connecting the dots between personal health, environmental health, spiritual health, and societal health. And I'll be giving you regular opportunities to become a health activist and take action on behalf of all our health. Today's show, actually, we'll be talking about how quantum activism can save civilization. This is a wonderful topic for our theme, and it's also the title of a new book by Dr. Amit Goswami. He'll be with us in a minute or two, and for a really exciting discussion about a really overlooked area, how to connect spirituality, what we do in our own lives, what we hold and believe in, with public activism on behalf of the whole collective and our whole society and globe. But every week we begin with a featured health action, so that every week you get an opportunity to take action. And this week's action is one that we wish we didn't have to do, but it's probably going to be a very good idea. So let me introduce that to you now. Basically, we learned this last week that the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, made a very unexpected decision to allow the use of a GMO herbicide known as Roundup to be used and not regulated for the growing of alfalfa, which is a genetically engineered crop in wide use for feeding animals. There was an outcry among the community concerned about the preservation of organic foods and organic farms, dairy, and organic standards because, as we know, these crops, when unregulated, do extensively crossbreed with organic crops. In response, the Organic Consumers Association has announced a new initiative called Millions Against Monsanto. And on my blog site, which is healthjournalistblog.com, you'll find my current blog contains links for you to take action, sign up, and be part of that if you're interested in preserving organic foods from the invasion of GMOs. Basically, these crops haven't been very well studied. Recently, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine said that there are serious health risks associated with GM food, including infertility, immune problems, accelerated aging, faulty insulin regulation, which we know leads to weight gain, and they advise consumers to avoid them. Well, for those of us who try to eat healthier foods, it's going to be harder to do because of this change in regulatory policy. The British journal, The Lancet, a highly regarded medical journal, said that they really can't understand the policy adopted by our government in 1992 and continued forward, saying governments should never have allowed these products into the food chain without insisting on rigorous testing. So if you eat organic food, if you want to eat healthy, be warned. The Whole Foods Market, which is part of a small kind of elite contingency that the Organic Consumers Association calls the organic elite, said the policy that the government sets for this alfalfa crop will most likely guide policies for other crops as well. And so this represents a serious compromise. So please do go to my lead blog at www.healthjournalistblog.com, and there you'll find links to sign up to take action as part of Millions Against Monsanto. So now that we have our action for the week kind of defined, and of course there are many actions every week, but you know, one step at a time, let's move on to talk with our featured guest today on the show, Dr. Amit Goswami, and it's really my pleasure to have him here. He's a professor of physics who served at the University of Oregon's Institute of Theoretical Science for over 30 years. And many of you know him from the film What the Bleep Do We Know. Personally, I feel he explains the entire realm of interconnection from our practical lives and how we live in the world, all the way to the highest understandings of quantum physics and how those integrate with traditional teachings of spirituality. I feel he explains and integrates them better than just about anyone else. So I'm really delighted, Dr. Goswami, to welcome you to Connect the Dots today, and for us to explore further the theme of your new book, How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization. Welcome. So, Dr. Goswami is actually has written numerous books, and we may be able to touch on some of them as well. He actually has a book called The Quantum Doctor, and in the latter part of the show, I'm hoping very much that we can get to discuss his ideas about integrative medicine and how all of that fits together. I think he really kind of lays forth something that has been missing in our understanding, which is, you know, an integrative paradigm. We have all of these different modalities, and we don't quite understand how they fit. In addition, we have a lot of teachings, how to take personal action for ourselves in terms of, you know, eating the right foods, doing the right things, working with our stress levels, working with our awareness. But what we don't do such a good job of is addressing some of the larger issues of our world. The issue, for example, that we have this week, our featured action, which is, the joining against to preserve organic standards against these incursions by Monsanto and by the alfalfa GM crop that's now been approved by the USDA, is really typifies a kind of disconnect that exists in our approach to health. I was just looking at someone's site, a doctor who offers a cleanse, and there were, cleanse products, going up for $250, $500, for a package of different things to eat for cleansing. I was on a call, a press conference earlier this week with people who were talking about the real dangers from environmental chemicals to our health. And there was another member of the press who was on the call from a major website and asked, we don't really want to give people this scary story. We don't want to frighten parents by the, statistics that now reveal growing rates of childhood cancers, very likely linked to the gradual incremental increase in exposures to toxic chemicals that have occurred over the last 30 years and that impact young children in utero and in early development in ways that are very harmful and are leading to, increases in cancer rates, in rates of spectrum disorders, and other things. So this member of the press said, well, we don't want to give this information and scare people. We don't want to scare parents, so what can we tell them they can do? Well, what can they do? The doctors who were the leading researchers who were leading the call basically said, well, they can try to eat organic foods, but these ingredients are present in so much agriculture. They're present in our products, in our home building products, and in children's clothing, and all kinds of things. So we can tell you to eat organic food, but our ability to follow this kind of 101 health advice, what can I do, is going to be limited by some of the social choices we make. So here we are this very week, and how do we toxic chemicals is not something that I can regulate by myself. It's not something that we can choose to avoid if it's allowed untested into the environment. But even when we retreat to do the things we can do, like eat organic foods, those two depend upon the availability of them. And so that's an individual choice that you can only make when the society as a whole has made a choice. So we need to really step up and think about how we make those kinds of choices, and where we need to come together and just kind of step beyond, the individual choice I make in my small world and really come together with all of the people who are concerned about not only themselves, but their children, about future generations, about life on this planet, and who really want to step up and be involved to create not only a healthy world in my own home with, you know, hopefully protecting me from whatever may be going on out there, but really a healthy society and a healthy earth. So that's really the major themes, you know, that we are looking at in Connect the Dots. And I think that today's, I know that Dr. Goswami will have a lot of interesting insight into this, because after having written many different books, he has finally graced us with how quantum activism can save civilization. And I, you know, look forward to getting his insights into that. So, Dr. Goswami, welcome to Connect the Dots.
Thanks, Alison. Glad to be here.
It's wonderful to have you here. So, you know, first let me ask you, why did you write a book about activism and connecting activism to the themes of spirituality and quantum physics that, you know, you have been helping people gain insight into for so many years?
Well, it seems that, you know, when you look at evolution from evolution of consciousness point of view, consciousness is evolving in such a direction where it is essential that we not only have a quiet paradigm shift in the sciences, but it is essential also that we allow people to grow in the direction that the new paradigm is suggesting. In other words, our evolution demands that we become more creative, more loving, more capable of engaging with the subtle. And you talk about organic food. I was chuckling because how timely that is for this kind of approach. So activism is necessary because in order to involve society in the new paradigm, it's not going to happen overnight because, you know, paradigm shifts take time, whereas we have crisis conditions right now. In order to solve the crisis of the kind that you mentioned, but of bigger kinds that we are noticing every day, you know, this turmoil in Egypt, this has to do with breakdown of democracy and terrorism and all these fears. And everywhere you look, the joblessness that in this country is prevalent and everybody is concerned, but nobody has any solution. And the culprit is the materialist economics. It has to be changed into a spiritual economics. So this guidance requires a new paradigm. So a quantum activist is one who uses quantum physics, principles of quantum physics, to change himself or herself and the society along with it. We no longer can afford to be personal and individual in our spiritual quest and quest for transformation. We have to bring our society with it. We have to bring our fellow human beings with it.
Yes, I really strongly agree with you about that. And yet it's been kind of a shortfall. It's almost as if the idea, I create my own reality, is to say, I don't have to get engaged. I don't have to be challenging situations out there. I don't have to be upset or angered by things that are, you know, unjust or have some other problem out there in the larger material world, because all that really matters is that I feel okay in my own self. And so, therefore, it all depends on how I feel, and it begins with me. But the problem is, then, for many people, for our entire generation, for many of us, it then stopped with me. It began with me, and it stopped with me. So how do we take it further?
Yeah, so the idea is that we do our practices in such a way, with the community involved in it. And we do it in three general categories. One I call right thinking, and that is the work on the paradigm shift. That also has an activistic component because you have to convince all the movers and shakers of the current establishment paradigm and challenge them. You literally have to challenge them because, you know, eventually science changes anyway. Eventually the establishment knowledge taught at the universities, they do undergo change, but it takes a long time. And our situation is that we don't have the time. So we have to do right thinking and convince the society, mainly it's a problem of communication, media and all that, to attract attention to the new paradigmatic thinking. Second, we have to do the right living. This is in accordance with all spiritual traditions. But, you know, as you said, if we start changing one at a time, it takes a long, long, long time to change the planet. Everyone has to change individually. Instead, we find in the new theory of evolution that only a few people can make the change. If a few people makes the change in working suitably, then the whole planet changes anyway. So these new theories are very, very powerful. Rupert Sheldrake first pointed this out, and quantum physics is supporting it. And it is this idea that a few people can change our evolution that really encourages me a whole lot. So we don't really have to even have the whole planet participating as quantum activists. All we need is a threshold number of quantum activists.
A threshold number. That's very interesting. You know, I don't recall if we've ever discussed this, but Dr. Goswami, but I actually, having been a health journalist for decades, have studied a lot of different health forms, Ayurveda, yoga, all kinds of different things. One of them is that I've studied is based upon Sheldrake's work of morphogenetic fields, and actually this is Rupert Sheldrake, the British biologist, and he also was on an earlier iteration of this show and hope to have him on again. So I actually practiced a form called family constellation work. That's a form that I've led and taught that deals with group systems, group mental fields, principally the family, but it can be other groups too. I think that the whole concept of mental fields and how they operate is a very unseen dimension, information fields, as per Sheldrake. Could you explain a little bit more about that, please, to our listeners?
Well, in the new view, we give a more concrete aspect of Sheldrake's work, which was already implicit.
Mm-hmm.
So what transpired is that the world consists of consciousness. Consciousness is the ground of all being, and in that there are four compartments of experiences. One of the compartments is the most obvious one, the material compartment, which we sense. All of these compartments are possibilities of consciousness. Quantum physics makes that very clear. Everything begins as possibilities. When we experience, we are choosing from the possibilities the actual event that we experience. This is why the phrase, we choose our own reality. So in some sense, that is correct. And so when we choose a material experience, that's the material world, that's sensing. Then there is thinking world, world of the mind, that we think. And then world of feeling, that's the world of vital energies. And then world of intuition, that's the world of archetypes like love, beauty, justice, truth, the values. So these are our four worlds of experience. Now, in that, the vital world is the one that is most important right now, because this is the one that we have lost track of. This is the one for which the objects can be called morphogenetic fields, the name that Rupert Sheldrake gave, which are the blueprints of biological form. So biological organs are correlated with these morphogenetic fields. Now, this is a very, very important idea, because every biological being, then, has its corresponding morphogenetic field. You can affect a biological being by affecting the morphogenetic field and vice versa. So when we make transformational changes, those changes are in the brain, but along with the brain changes, we also correspondingly change the morphogenetic fields. And these changes are non-local. They are stored outside of space and time, and therefore can be inherited later by others. So in this way, the changes that we make today in our morphogenetics, with these transformations that we work on, can be inherited in the future by children of a new era. They will automatically have love circuits in their brain that we worked on, that we developed today by our collective work. So it is a fantastic idea, and so prevailing, so compelling, that I am positive that if we start doing that, only a few people can change the world in the future, maybe in just six generations.
In just how many generations?
Six or seven. That may be all that it takes.
Wow.
So,
do you think we have six or seven generations? Do we have that? I mean, do you think that'll be...
Well, yes, I think so. I think that all the doomsday scenarios fall short. I think that the work will also have, because we are not just stopping with making changes in morphogenetic field. This is the social component. At the same time, we have to buy time by working with our societies right now and make the changes necessary to keep the society intact. I mean, right now, you know, the book makes it very clear. We have at hand the way these changes can be made. We can change materialist economics into spiritual economics, and that opens up the whole economic field to new components, new products like vital energy products, meaning products, which we already have in the form of books, etc. But it can be done. In other words, for a long time, we have felt that consumer only consumes material products. But it's not true. We are consuming mental products all the time. We read books. What do we read books for? Is it for the paper? No, of course not. It's for the meaning. So we are consuming meaning. But the vital energy part of the consumption has been ignored almost totally. You know, this is where, for example, this debate about organic food versus non-organic, the fertilizer helped food. What's the difference? One major difference we are not even noticing. Anytime you change the composition, the organs of the living product, living body, the morphogenetic fields associated with it changes. And so if we grow food by artificial means, using energy, fertilizers, etc., or insecticides, especially those things, then the components may change enough so that the associated morphogenetic fields, the vitality that we get from the food, may be quite different. We need studies to show that there is no difference. I mean, I don't exclude the possibility that there may not be enough difference to alarm us. But there also may be this component that there is vital energy also we eat when we eat food. It's not just physical nourishment. It's nourishment of our whole body, including vitality. In fact, the vital part is very essential part of what we call nutrition. And this component is being totally ignored today because we don't have any knowledge, although the knowledge is there to be had because alternative medicine has come in a major way. How does alternative medicine heal? They heal through vital energy. This idea has not gotten into the mainstream because somehow, you know, the journalists are falling short. They are not publishing the results, tremendous amounts of results that we have, verifying the vital energy ideas, the theories that we have today, which completely satisfyingly showing that, yes, this is a legitimate way of thinking. Old philosophical arguments against it have all been solved, and still we are not getting really the needed attention on this aspect of the problem. I mean, I greatly admire the work that you are doing, for example, but if you, in addition, point out this very important aspect of vitality, how Monsanto really is delivering a dangerous change in the way we get our nourishment from food. Mm-hmm. Our vitality itself is being compromised. Mm-hmm. That should be pointed out.
You know, that's very interesting, Dr. Goswami, and actually we're going to come up on a break in a minute or two here, but maybe on the other end of it we can talk about this and maybe begin talking about it a little bit now, but which is this. I, having reported on health for so many years, think about this all the time. And you know, of course, my beat really has been integrative health primarily. But along the way, of course, I've had to learn a lot of conventional medical science research, that kind of thinking, that kind of way of that method of proof and everything. One of the things it seems to me is that, you know, we use the term mechanistic, that kind of becomes a sort of buzzword, but actually, you know, we're playing around the kinds of studies that our medical research does is basically we're moving around molecules and chemicals as if, you know, this chemical hits that chemical, as if we were operating within a machine or a dead system. It seems almost as if we could, all of the science that we have, and we've been very conditioned, I'm talking about human biological science, we've been very conditioned to think of ourselves as a collection of chemicals and molecules that drugs or foods all act upon in a chemical manner. And the whole life principle, when you talk about vitality, the whole life principle is absent from yeah. that model, and therefore we always want to look for proof in a dead system. Or a model that's really predicated on something that's not alive, where in fact we are a living system. So, you know, I would really, maybe we'll go into our break now if we if we're ready to do that, because I'd love to, you know, come out from our break and really get your thoughts on that. I think it's a real, really important question for people to understand about science.
We can do something about it.
Exactly. So stay with us, listeners, on Connect the Dots, and we'll be back with Dr. Amit Goswami after the break.
You are listening to PRN. Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, this is Eric Ochsner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
I'm Elaine Schnupper, host producer of Evolving Ideas. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and global on the Internet. Join me each week on the Progressive Radio Network to explore the universe and our relationship to it.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
South of the border.
Hello, I'm Johnny Mueller, and I have a brand new show called The Expat Files, and it's all about living, working, playing, or retiring in Latin America. I know what it's like to buy land, build a house, start a business. I've been through it in a dozen Latin countries. So, if you're thinking about moving down, or you're just curious, be sure to listen in, Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Down Mexico way.
The Progressive Radio Network is looking to expand its programming, and we are looking for your ideas. If there's a subject that you are passionate about and we don't cover it, let us know. Give us a call at 646-307-4482 or email our program director, carolee@garynoll.com. That's K-A-R-A-L-E-E at garynoll.com. The Progressive Radio Network, the number one forum for progressive minds.
Gary Noll.
I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and my guest today on the show is Dr. Amit Goswami, leading physicist and author of the new book, How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization. The first half of our show, we had a really terrific conversation, and we'll be continuing that in just a moment, but I also want to make sure that listeners know how to get hold of your book, Dr. Goswami. His website is www.amit, A-M-I-T, and then G-O-S-W-A-M-I.org. And you can find this book there, links to this book, as well as links to many of the previous books you've written, including Creative Evolution and The Quantum Doctor, as well as look into your upcoming schedule. And for people on both coasts, Dr. Goswami is going to be participating in some very exciting events. Dr. Goswami, New Yorkers like me are delighted that you're going to be at the New York Open Center on February 25th and 26th, giving two different, an evening talk and a day-long presentation. This is certainly something to go to. I went last year when you were here in New York, and it was fantastic, really. Highly recommended. And then the very next day, you fly out to Carlsbad, California, and I'm going to be there, too. This is Deepak Chopra's Sages and Scientists Symposium, where Dr. Goswami will be one of the featured presenters, along with a whole host of really outstanding people further exploring these questions, and I will be covering it for the Huffington Post as well as my blog, healthjournalistblog.com. Listeners who are interested in upcoming radio shows, my blogs, activist opportunities, books like the wonderful one that Dr. Goswami has recently written, can sign up and get my once-a-week e-zine and be kind of tuned into all of this by going to healthjournalistblog.com and signing up. So I hope you'll do that. So now we are back with you, Dr. Goswami. And in our last segment, we were just talking about the missing element or the missing essence in our understanding of health, human biochemistry, life, medicine, and biology is the life force itself. And how and why is this sort of somehow excluded from our existing scientific model, or is it?
This is can be a tragic proportion omission, because you know, to think that everything is just the atoms and molecules, and there is nothing but atoms and molecules, which has been prevalent for the last 50-60 years, is destroying the notion of vitality itself. So when we think of ourselves as atoms and molecules, accidentally, of course, vital energies sometimes remain intact. But other times, what we do is changes the composition of the cell, the organ itself, so much so that the associated vital energies change also. And then they are not producing vitality anymore to our body. In that way, it is very, very dangerous. We depend for our medicine and for our nutrition on these organic substances, not only to get the proteins, carbohydrates, etc., that we need, but we also depend on them for the vitality, the associated vital energy that we need. And the proof, of course, is that the vital energy medicines like homeopathy, which eliminates the physical completely, virtually completely, and still has medicinal value. Where does that medicinal value come from? Studies have shown it's not just placebo, although component of placebo may very well be there. But what is not placebo? What is it? What is it is this very important ingredient of vital energy. There is other direct proof, like acupuncture. You cannot explain acupuncture with any material explanation. The vital body explanation, vital energy explanation is the only correct one. There are now direct measurement devices that are available, which is coming in very strongly, that vital energy is now quantifiable. We have Carlian photography, that's an old experiment, but now we have biophoton emission tomography, which can measure vital energies that come out of, for example, our chakras, where vital energy is directly associated with the biological organs at the chakras. So it's getting a rapidly developing field, and I'm happy to say that some companies are showing some interest in it. Now I'm involved with a little bit of that. So there is rapid progress, but it should be much more rapid in order for making a dent in the problems that we are facing. And the problems that you mentioned with organic food, that's a very serious one, because, you know, here is a failed experiment. The whole Green Revolution largely has failed. And we have the means of replacing it, making it better with a new organic revolution, where we have, if we can take care of the vital energy component of things and properly, we really have an opportunity to guide the people of our planet to a much more nutritional, preventive kind of maintenance of health.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, to me it seems like there are a couple of things that function as obstacles. One would be that most people are not that accustomed to taking action on the larger collective. They kind of regard it as something that's too big for them, too resistant, too difficult, so they don't take, you know, they may not go online and sign a petition or call their congressman. They go from either it doesn't matter to sort of it's hopeless very quickly, and I'd love to hear how maybe quantum activism can help get us out of that. And the other thing is that our scientific model has somehow left out the living component. You know, how did that happen, and how can we bring it back in?
Well, let's tackle with the first question first. The philosophical objections that materialists gave were very powerful. The objections were, there really is one vital objection, which is that dualism. How does the vital energy interact with the physical? This single question thwarted all claims by those people who were proposing the existence of vital energy. Quantum physics allows us to solve that, because both vital energy and the physical world remain as possibilities within consciousness, and then consciousness chooses simultaneously, we call it non-locality, without using signal, so there is no dualism. The choices manifest the physical as well as the vital simultaneous. So when we are choosing to look at an organ in our physical body, we are also looking at its corresponding vital partner, the vital energy associated with that. And this is the reason that, you know, in the heart region of our body, there is the thymus gland. So whenever we are looking at the immune system, we are correspondingly looking at the associated vital energy, which is romantic love. So in this way, many aspects of our experience become explained, and the objections that scientists give, dualism, also falls away. So we have a very good theory now, without any of the scientific objections that could be leveled at this, against these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
The second question, how do we actually get with it? I think quantum activism, the new thing that is being suggested is that we work on it ourselves first. Anybody who has ever been to a Tai Chi master or has done yoga and pranayama, working with the vital energies with breath, knows how easy it is to experience vital energy. Anybody can be convinced doing any of these exercises, simple exercises of vital energy in a matter of seconds. Mm-hmm. Once you get convinced and see how quickly you can energize yourself in difficult situations, use vital energy in your personal life, then you'll be so convinced that this is a major, major, major scientific advance that we are getting and it is possible to propagate this by changing the minds and hearts of our congresspeople and make new legislations, which would be simply to just provide funding for the research in these areas. If government endorses research, that has a tremendous effect, approval effect in the society. Alternative medicine started getting research money from NIH, National Institutes of Health, in the 90s, thanks to President Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and others. So that was very vital for regaining respect in such things as Chinese medicine and Indian medicine and homeopathy. The same thing needs to happen now with our work with vitality of food. We should pay similar attention. You know, preventive medicine is coming into vogue somewhat because healthcare costs are going up and up and up, and many people are realizing that without preventive medicine, we just cannot bring the health care costs down. So this is helping, and a part of main part of it is nutrition. And so when we start a coherent, connected work on all these fields together, and always emphasize that the personal change, the personal verification of these components, sub-components of our experience, is important. You know, everybody who has done it themselves, everybody who knows that his or her vitality is as real as his or her senses, cannot possibly shy away from being an activist in terms of changing the hearts and minds of the legislatures who will bring in the new legislation, and also journalists who will bring in the good news about the new aspects of our science.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dr. Goswami, what I would love to have you share with our listeners is your healthcare paradigm with its five levels. Because I'm working on a book now, actually, and I was just writing about this. I once did an interview with a physician, an integrative physician, who's also an acupuncturist. And, you know, since you brought up acupuncture, and I said to him, well, how do you fit these two together? Like, how do they kind of fit for you in terms of your practice of, you know, modalities from two different medical perspectives, two different views? How does it come together? He said, they don't come together, and they never can. And that really struck me because, you know, this is how we kind of wind up going back all the time to biochemical proof and you know, molecular arguments for what works, is because we don't really have an overarching paradigm that's commonly agreed to. But you have articulated one.
Now we do.
I'd love you to share that with people.
So, you know, when we recognize that the world is made of consciousness, then decide that consciousness has four different worlds of experience, not just one, the material, then everything falls together. Because consciousness mediates the interaction between these different worlds of experience. Consciousness mediates the interaction of the material body and the vital body, material world and the vital world, or material world and the mental world. So that fundamental argument of dualism, which makes the alternative health physicians very defensive, that mm-hmm. argument no longer holds. Consciousness does it non-locally. Non-local means without signals, a communication without signals. This communication without signals, which is a verified component of our science, verified by myriad experiments, is revolutionizing. That is the really, really revolutionizing concept. That and the idea is that we can heal ourselves by choosing. This is called quantum healing. These two ideas are the revolutionary concepts of medicine. But coming back to your five levels, so we have these four levels of experience and then the totality, which is the fifth level, totality of consciousness itself. So disease can happen at all five levels. Any of the five bodies can go wrong. And similarly, healing then will have to involve the healing of what went wrong in that particular body, which will then percolate in the wrongness of the bodies that come under it. For example, if the mind gives wrong meaning to one experience, that may cause a block of vital energy. Suppose a fellow has been jilted at the age of 16 by his romantic love partner and forever decides that I will not love again. Or a woman who has lost her husband forever decides that who can replace this wonderful lover that I have, I will not love again. So that suppresses vital energy in the heart chakra. That suppression of vital energy then affects the working of the immune system. And the, both of these fellows eventually get cancer because of it. Because when the immune system doesn't work properly, cancerous cells can grow without any hindrance. And that is, of course, what malignancy is about. So women's breast cancer or cancer in general can have this kind of history. Not all cancers certainly can be said to be because of this, but a substantial number of cancers can be because of this. You know, today we can even detect a woman's breast cancer at very early stages by actually measuring the vital energy of the unhealthy immune system at the heart chakra. We can actually measure it with Carlian photography. And people are successfully diagnosing even before any other method of diagnosis is available. Early signs of breast cancer making it much more possible to heal the cancer. So the possibilities are just so enormous for this new science.
So what you're saying with the different levels is there's the material level, then there's the mental level, is that right?
Mm-hmm. There is vital level, mental level, and the supramental, the archetypal level, and then the level, holistic level of whole consciousness.
Right. So basically, you know, so with what you're talking about, because I also, as I had mentioned earlier in the show, was in a teleconference, a press teleconference this week on a new study that came out and showed that the rising preponderance of unregulated toxic chemicals in the environment are increasing childhood cancers, for example. So what you're saying is that that would be the material level. There could be a component there. Then you were mentioning on the vital level, there could be something in maybe the family history or the or something else going on there. And then what would...
Or the environment. The environment would affect the vital because the environment affects the physical. The physical is correlated with the vital. So all environment toxic effects of the environment also affects our vital body. Even temperature changes in the environment affects the vital body. That's
really?
How ancient Chinese medicine have recipes for how to deal with fever or seasonal ailments.
So anything in the environment, either physical or stress because the country is at war or there's an economic crisis, anything environmental would affect the vital
body.
Yeah,
or also vital energy disturbances in the environment. For example, suppose you live in an environment where there are many unhappy people. Mm-hmm. That will directly affect the vital energies that you have, because unhappy vital energy invariably means closed heart chakra, and that will close in also your heart chakra. Mm-hmm. And if heart chakra is closed for a considerable amount of time, we tend to have, we become subject to the eventual malfunction of the immune system, open us to various diseases, not only cancer.
Fascinating. That's very interesting. So you kind of have this... Your view weaves all of these different things together in a way that really is quite interesting and meaningful. You know, that's fascinating because especially the last thing you mentioned I relate to because we were on the last week's program we actually discussed this because I have been involved in a environmental cause in the New York area to help preserve the water supply of New York City from the toxic chemicals that are used in a new kind of gas drilling called fracking that they have been doing in our neighboring state of Pennsylvania. Now they want to bring it to New York, and they have found that where this practice is done, people's water supplies very often will become contaminated. And so as part of my activism, I'm in touch with people who have had this happen. You know, their wells have been poisoned, people have become ill, various things. And, you know, I think one of the reasons that people also don't engage much or resist activism or want to tune it out is that it's actually, I mean, my experience has been, it's emotionally painful. It's upsetting. It's sad, you know.
It is.
Yeah.
We just don't realize how much important this involvement is to become activists in these domains. What we are eating, what we are drinking, those things are vital energy components. Water has very important vital energy component to contribute to us. It's not just a chemical H2O. When this is understood, we realize how dangerous it is to think of water purification plants where we don't consider the vital energy components at all. We just hope that the vital energy components will be unaffected by the whole very violent processes often of what we go through. In other words, toxicity, chemical environment, these things have to be taken much more seriously. The vital energy aspects of ourselves got to be put in the equation before we get a full picture of how badly deviated we have become from our norm.
Yeah, that's really, you know, so the quandary there is, you know, which I've experienced, and I think it's also why some people are like, you know, don't want to go there when it comes to activism, is you have to, it really takes stepping up to a much greater extent on your own personal level to actually, you know, so on the one hand, the goal is we're trying to protect the water of New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and we're trying to thereby protect the health of people because we're made up of water. If the water has these toxic poisons, it's a problem. They don't really have a very good way of addressing this issue, as you pointed out. Then they're putting toxic waste here, there, and everywhere that, you know, that comes from this, et cetera. But yet again, if you deal with the effects of this, then it's, you know, also an emotionally upsetting thing. So it actually, it takes almost, it's one level, I found, of, you know, of spiritual practice to sort of keep myself happy and positive and connected and feeling, but it's a whole other level when you begin to look at these problems of the world and various kinds of threats to our life and health and well-being and planet. It's a whole different level, you know, that seems
right.
to be required.
Right.
Do you know what I'm talking about there? I mean,
yes, of course, if you keep yourself healthy, that because of this quantum non-locality, that has a very positive effect on your environment. So if substantial number of people became aware of vital energy health and maintained a positive emotional frame of mind, then certainly that would change, starting with the local environment, because they are all correlated with this person, to even bigger and bigger. It's a question of triggering the non-local connection. Non-local connection is potentially always there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could trigger it. So now one suggestion is to develop global networks. One suggestion is, for example, conversations on the telephone and through internet. And this correlates us. So our personal vital energies can infuse the vital energy field of other people through this non-local correlation, which begins at local level because it has to be triggered. But once triggered, we are then non-locally connected. So if I'm communicating with somebody on the internet, and that non-local connection will establish vital energy equilibrium. If I have vital energy equilibrium, then he or she, the other correspondent to me, will also get good vital energies. So there are many ways of doing this, but what we need badly research proving these points.
Mm-hmm.
Today we have a plethora of behavioral research that we get published, that gets published in newspapers every day, and much of it, as you know, is repetitive, contradictory, because behaviorism just not the whole answer to the human condition. But we need similar research, including the vital energy component, and see how this research becomes much more reliable, much more consistent, and then we can take this research to heart and follow them, and the society will only be better for it, more healthier, et cetera.
You know, I certainly applaud the idea of research, and at the upcoming Sages and Scientists Symposium, where a whole group of incredible minds are getting together on some of these topics, hopefully, you know, some people will be attracted to that and really support these kinds of efforts. And it also occurs to me, and I know you're aware of this because I had actually first encountered you through taking some of your courses online, but the internet also, I think, is very interesting. I do quite a lot of, you know, obviously I blog on Huffington Post and on my website, but also a lot of Facebook connection, a lot of exchange. It's almost as if the internet, sometimes I feel, came into being to potentiate some of the things you're talking about. Do you find that?
Yes, you're absolutely right. The internet is can become, although, you know, it has many other vices also, which we cannot ignore, and I hope people continue looking towards eliminating those things. But now this aspect of internet, that it is the local trigger that triggers the non-local connection between people and brings them together. So, and once non-locality is established between you and the corresponding, for example, you can have a Facebook presence in the internet, and you know you have 5,000 or so correlated people, and then a whole fan club. If you correspond with them regularly, and particularly if you also associate that with an intention to become correlated with each of your Facebook partners. Then you already have a community. You have a non-local community. And then, you know, you can develop feelings. You can develop wonderful, holistic beauty in your day-to-day existence. And that will percolate through your entire internet community. I mean, these things, these positive uses of the internet, you know, we get perturbed because Facebook is being used by others, manipulated and all that, but we shouldn't. Those things let the organizers, let the government, let whoever, you know, they let them control those things. But let us use the good aspect of the internet and start making huge correlated, quantum, non-locally correlated communities.
That sounds just terrific. I think we're coming up to the end of our show here. But, you know, let's all meet again on Facebook and, you know, sort of join together and with a good intention for healing on a planetary level and for saving civilization with quantum activism. Thank you so much, Dr. Goswami, for being with us. And, you know, make sure, everyone, to get how quantum activism can save civilization. And let's meet up here on this radio program, Connect the Dots, and on Facebook in order to potentiate the teachings that he's been sharing with us.